I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
1, 2, 3.
Craig and Bethany rewatched Stell Game. They've loved the show ever since they were waves. But can it stand the test of time? We'll chat shite, then you decide. Cause it's time to rewatch Stell Game with Bethany and Craig.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Still Game podcast. This is Bethany and Craig here, and today we are talking about Series 1, Episode 3, Cold.
I would say cold.
Cold. Bethany. Right. Well, do you know what? In my accent, I'm not gonna pretend to be someone I'm not, Craig, right? I've got too much ethos for that. Nah, kidding. I just don't talk like that.
Never ask you to be somebody you're not. Yeah, that's a good shout for an actress.
Fine. Okay, let me phrase it. Never ask me to be someone I'm not unless you're paying me equity minimum. Okay.
Fair enough. Okay.
And you know what? Funny that it was this episode today, because obviously by the time this is aired, it's going to be a bit different. But I was out sledging today in Kelvin Grove Park, knocking off wains, getting pushing them out of the way so I could go down the big bit. And it was, did you say minus 17 in the Highlands? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Gosh. Well. Look at that. So yeah, it is very, very cold. So this is the perfect episode to watch today. This episode aired on the 13th of September in 2002.
Yes, so it was originally aired 2nd, but it's down on Netflix's 3rd.
Yes. And you know
this
what?
This is a running theme of Series 1. Once we get into Series 2, this isn't a problem anymore.
I know. But I think it works as the 3rd episode. I like it. I think it's good. We talked about this last week, but I think that the way it is on Netflix is the better way.
Don't
tell them I said that.
Yeah, because you're right. The whole Jack Jarvis putting his name on the door and the doormat, that makes more sense as the 2nd episode.
Aye. And then, do you know what I mean? There's 2 episodes and then they're like into winter. Ooh.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you want to give me your opinion, your overview of the episode, Craig?
Darling
Craig.
I think it was maybe a little bit harsh on last week's episode, because I do think it's good. I think pretty much every single episode of Still Game in the first 6 series is very, very good telly. Mm-hmm. With maybe a 1 or 2 exceptions that I'm not that fussed about. But I did kind of... I was a little bit critical of last week's show. It was just kind of... I thought there was just... It was maybe just kind of easier to talk about some of the things that I didn't like about it rather than articulate some of the things I did like. So I've tried to... go on the opposite direction this week and try and concentrate a bit more on what I did like about the show. But it was very easy to do and very easy not to be negative at all, because I think this is just an exceptional episode of Still Game. It is brilliant from start to finish. I think the pacing is very good. Well, I said last week's was maybe a little bit baggy in points. I don't think that's like this at all. Mm-hmm. There's so many great touches to this entire episode, like, for instance, kind of when you're getting in the centre, so like kind of skipping ahead in the story, Winston's already revealed that he's the one that's basically he's setting it up so you could basically steal electricity. And Victor, Jack and Victor, but kind of mainly led by Victor, want to stay to their principles and morals, don't want to partake in that. Other people are kind of looking at them a bit side-eyed for not doing it, but it's the whole kind of touches that they do. So it's like the two scenes. So there's the scene in the Veeds and the scene in the Bookies where, as Jack says, it's kind of like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. There's a little bit of flair rather than people just kind of saying to them, oh, you're daft for not doing that. Because if they didn't add that flair, I think it would be a little, it would just get a little bit pedestrian and a little bit kind of slow. And then you have the scene in the cafe, and again, it's a similar sort of thing. But usually, I think in other shows, you'll be saying, oh, again, they've done this scene basically for the third time. But then it kind of moves on for Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and it has that little kind of nod to The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly with the kind of close-in extreme shots of their faces where they're kind of doing the Mexican standoff, like looking left to right. And it's just that bit just makes it really fun. And also as well, when it comes to the end, Jack eventually turns and you're thinking, again, in the hands of a less meticulous, I don't even know meticulous is the word, a less kind of gifted creative group, then you would have had Jack decided he was going to do it, and then another 10 minutes or something of Victor decided he wasn't going to do it, and that just carrying on a little too much and feeling a little too, right, come on, get to the point kind of thing. But it's just one scene. And it just, the whole thing moves along at just such a great pace. And part of that as well is the opening, when you have the kind of slapstick opening with Eric, Victor and Jack all slipping on the ice, like, you know, famous Timpsons 1999. That's kind of another kind of great meme that's repeated all the time on Twitter. But then they can just come back to that at various points throughout the episode, and it's funny each point. And again, that just helps the pace so much. And it just, it's such a terrific episode to rewatch time and again. It's still funny all the time. There's a lot of great, we'll get to that when we do the categories later, but there's a lot of really good line reads in this as well. There's not even any really, again, we'll get to this later on, there's not even really much in it, I think, that aged poorly at all. I just think it's just a cracking episode, and certainly the best of the three so far, if I do say so myself.
Do you know what? I really don't have much to add to that. I wholeheartedly agree. I told my partner today, I said, oh, I'm watching some Still Game. I need to figure out the categories. I need my answers. And he was like, which one are you watching? And I said, oh, I'm watching Cold. And he went, ah, Timpsons 1999. And I was looking at him and I was like, you know, he's got it. But like, it is so well done. And I think you know, you said the opening scene that starts with that real slapstick, like all three of them on the ground, the fact that they intersperse different people falling on the ground in that scene throughout the episode to like bring it back to, oh, it's cold, that is the plot of the episode, it is cold.
The sound effects of it are really good as well, because it's got that really kind of blustery wind all the way through it that really kind of makes you feel cold when you're watching it. And speaking of the sound effects, the sound when Victor clinks the mug off of Willie Napier's face is
Written that down. I've made a note of that. It's like a little tink. And it's so funny. So bad. Do you know what? Because again, I couldn't quite remember it. I was like, do they actually show the dead body? And I was like, yeah, they do show the dead body this wee. And do you know what, the fact that that guy, that actor, sat that still for so long, because I really don't think they would have, I should ask Thingy if I remember when he comes on, you and Angus, our guest later, I should ask him, but I don't think that's a piece of prosthetic. Like, I think that's a real dude.
And it's definitely a real dude. You can see him moving slightly.
Oh no, I missed that. Well, you ruined it for me, thanks Craig.
You can see his hand shaking.
Aye,
just
that's
a little
hard
bit.
Pose.
That is a very
a
hard pose.
I wonder how many times they did that scene, because they were like, you moved again, and he'd be like, sorry.
He does very well with his eyes and his face, but his hand moves a wee bit. I noticed that today for the first time. And
God damn it.
There's also, I think the tone of this episode is just, it's nailed perfect as well, and it's such a tightrope to walk, because there is that political statement of pensioners basically being systematically kind of killed off by the government, who basically give them sod-all money to get through the winter, and electricity is too expensive and all that stuff. And that's a main part of the episode. But Willie Napier dies, so you don't meet Nellie Napier before, so that makes it easier that you don't have any connection. I know it's only like the third episode as well, so there won't be a huge connection anyway, but it's somebody you've never heard of before.
Mm-hmm.
He's dead. That could, again, they easily could have played that a bit more respectful, but
yeah.
I think it's better for the episode that they don't hammer home that point a wee bit too much, because it could be a different show if that was the case. And I know they do have the pathos at times, but I think the political kind of undertones and like kind of mourning would have just been a little bit too hard for this
kind of
episode.
It wouldn't have been comedy.
And
it wouldn't have been.
And it also ties into the whole hypothermia sweepstake thing as well. In that, yes, it's a bit, yes, it's morbid, but this is what we do in life. This is certainly what I do, 100% what I do. I am the kind of, to badly quote Bare Naked Ladies, I'm the kind of guy that laughs at funerals. Like, I'm the kind of guy who shields himself from the horrors of the world by kind of laughing and using comedy. And I think that's what, obviously Jack and Victor are appalled, but that's basically what the kind of guys in the bar are doing when they're, you know, taking bets and putting up odds on who's going to die next, who's not going to make it through the winter. And that, the way they treat the Willie Napier death were just kind of a few great jokes, like clinking the glass off him, going next door and you know, the chat with Mankey Frankie and all that. It just kind of, it all ties in. There's different levels to this, which is very impressive for a half hour sitcom.
Yeah, and you know what? And I think they really nailed that, the way that pensioners do talk and think about death. Like, even just like a few months ago, but like pre-COVID, I was at my dad's mum's house, my granny Jean's house, and she went, "Do you want spoons?" And I went, "What?" She was like, "Do you want spoons?" And I was like, "Oh, okay." And she gave me like a wee set of silver spoons. And she went, "Because that way you won't get taxed on them after I die." And I was there and I was like, "What did you just say to me?" I was like, "What did you just say to me?" And she keeps like giving us stuff so that we don't get it after she dies. Like, she's like preparing. And I'm like, "Grant, you're not that old." And she goes, "Just in case." And like the casualness with which pensioners talk about their death, like they face their own mortality, and they can joke about it and they can be lighthearted about it. Whereas I am petrified of death and I don't want to ever talk about it. So, you know. Because that's young people. And I think they've nailed that really, really well in this episode. Like, these pensioners who have faced their own mortality and faced the fact that the government not only don't support them, but they, you know, the government just wants them off because, you know, they're costing them money.
Yeah,
I
know, it's superb. And just one final note I had, just to mention, that doesn't quite fit in the categories. Just the costume design and the makeup design on Winston when he's in the flat and he's just dripping with sweat. There's just like a layer of sweat on him. It's like, they must have had to do that with makeup, because otherwise, like, they'll be shooting for so long in like the same rooms, and Jack and Victor would just be the same if the room was like that hot. So whatever they managed to do to just Winston look like he just had a layer of sweat on the entire time was perfect, because they just added
that. It was
to that
so
scene.
Gross.
And it's kind of the same as well, a little bit with Stevie and the bookies, which I think is the first sighting of Stevie.
Yes, it is. It is. And he's really terrifying.
First sighting of Stevie, and I think as well, first sighting of Frankie, but he's called Derek.
Yeah, I did think that. I was like, I know this face. Yeah, first sighting of them both, which I think is really, really interesting. It was a real community ensemble episode. Like,
no,
even Liza was in it.
Let me just correct that. I said Frankie. I don't mean Frankie. I mean Fergie, the wee boy in the pub.
Yeah, sorry.
They called him Derek, and we'll get to that later when we do smart ass comments, because there's quite a few, as much as I love the episode, there's quite a few things you can pick holes in, but if you really, we're picking holes, but if you let that spoil your enjoyment, you're just a miserable bastard. But it's just fun to be it's fun to be a geek sometimes and go, "Well, actually, you see that bit?"
Sometimes it's fun to just be a wee prick and be like, "Well, actually, if you look at, you know, the exchange rate back in 2002,
they overpaid for that telephone call.
And they did overpay for that. I loved that bit. Put it in the box and he puts it in his wee, "Where'd you get that?" "Maryhill Shopping Centre."
it's great because you're kind of wondering as well, did he steal it or did he...
He definitely
or
stole
it. Or was
it
getting chucked out and he bought it? Or did or was it just getting chucked out and he just took it for like a skip or something?
It's so funny. Love it. Brilliant. Well, that is the overview of the episode. I think it might be time to bring on our guest for this evening.
Yes, I do believe so.
Oh, I do believe so. Yes, sir. And here we have one of the executive producers on Still Game, Ewan Angus.
Time to rewatch Still Game with Bethany and Craig.
Hello, Ewan. How are you?
I'm absolutely fine, thanks.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad to hear it. Now, just so that I don't get this wrong, would you be able to quickly describe for us your involvement on Still Game? Because a lot of the time, people don't quite know what producers, etc. do, and it would be really good to hear it straight from the horse's mouth, as it were.
Okay. I was the commissioning editor of Still Game, so it was basically my decision to go for it as a series. And thereafter, I was the, one of the executive producers on it, which was basically representing the interests of the BBC. There's generally an executive producer from a broadcaster and an executive producer from the production team.
Okie dokie. So in that case, what do you think? So when you look at a script, when you look at a pilot or something, what, because you've produced quite a few comedies on the BBC, is that right?
Yeah. I commissioned and exec produced a fair range of comedies over, well, the best part of 20 years.
That's mad. And so when you look at it, what, even if you use Still Game as an example, what makes you look at something and be like, aye, this will work, this is funny?
I think to a large extent you go with your instincts. I think it's very difficult to commission comedy that you don't find funny yourself. I think you can commission a lot of different types of programmes that don't necessarily appeal to you personally. But I think with comedy, it is difficult. If you just don't see where the laughs are or where they're likely to come, then it's difficult to get behind it, because they're expensive programmes to make, and they, you know, they require a fairly significant level of commitment. I'm speaking from the point of view of a broadcaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Once you watch the first one, you know, you want to watch the whole season. So what was that about Still Game? What was it that made you think, yeah, this is it, this is going to be the thing that I invest my time in, and I ask the BBC and any other, you know, producers to invest their money in?
Well, I think to answer that one, you need to spool back slightly. I got involved in commissioning in 1996. The first show that I commissioned was a show for radio, which was Chewing the Fat. And that ran for three series, and the characters of Jack and Victor were part of the Chewing the Fat lineup from the word go. So in a sense, there was evidence that certainly the pairing at the heart of what would become Still Game had what it took. The big challenge was to flesh out the world for them, the world they inhabited, and to populate it with equally compelling, appealing characters, which is exactly what I think Ford and Greg managed to do very successfully.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. And because, you know what, funny you mentioned that, because 2 weeks ago we had Rab Christie on, and he said the exact same thing. He said the two centre characters were kind of secure, they were there, they were ready, and the challenge was, you know, can we get 30 minutes of par? Can we get 30 minutes of stuff happening, you know, around with the rest of these characters as well? And you did, which is quite nice.
Yeah, I think one of the things that stands out about Still Game, and in fact quite a lot of successful ensemble comedies, is that Ford and Greg were very generous about writing great lines for other characters, not just for Jack and Victor. And I think that came through. You know, all of those characters, Isa, Winston, Naveed, they all played a really major part in the success of Still Game.
Oh, yeah, definitely. In fact, one of the... So when we talk about the show each episode, something Craig and I are doing is we are rating the show on different aspects of it. And one of the categories that we're talking about is Best Supporting Character. And I think that's so important to do, because I think you're quite right. It isn't just about Ford and Greg. It isn't just about Jack and Victor. It's about the whole, you know, kind of Craig Land community.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. And you know, everything from the kind of formatted sequence stuff, such as the response that Bobby gave every time Jack and Victor came into the pub, and the reply, the response that Jack and Victor would give, all of that was quite carefully plotted through, and it gives the audience something which they can hold on to and which they recognise as a kind of constant feature, and then you can layer the surprises and the other elements on top of that.
Yeah, it's like any good pop songwriter uses a hook, and it's in the chorus and it's there, something you'd expect, and it's the same with variations every time. And I feel like that's what you achieved, you know, with Still Game. You had a hook every episode, you kind of knew part of the formula, but there was still room to be surprised.
Yeah, and I think Ford and Greg are in the writing, were very good at varying the tempo of individual episodes, going for a bit of pathos when it was appropriate, and then turning that on its head to go for, you know, an absolute killer, either a killer punchline or a very strong visual gag.
Yeah, varying the tempo. Love the music metaphor there. Thank you very much. we were actually talking about that last week as well. The varying in tempo, to use your words, and how, you know, there's that kind of juxtaposition, I guess, between that really heightened comedy, especially the physical side of comedy, to these kind of like heartbreaking, especially like the monologues that Jack and Victor have in the first two episodes. Which I think, you know, it can make you really sad. Like, obviously, in the episode last week, it was all about whether Victor's son is going to come and visit. And he has that whole monologue about, you know, pensioners and how you can't depend on your wains anymore and things like that. And was that something that attracted you to the piece? Like, you know, the thing that came alongside the comedy?
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, I think it's always been an aspect of their writing. It surfaced within Chewing the Fat at times as well, and I think it was clear that they could handle those shifts in tone, and I think a lot of really good comedy, if you look at something like Only Fools and Horses, it was good. It was very good. John Sullivan had a similar kind of gift for being able to go for pathos when it was appropriate and when it was going to work, and it helps the audience invest in comedy characters in a richer way than if all they're doing is spouting gags all the time.
Aye, well, arguably you need to be, you know, need to be invested in the character, in the characters. Goodness sake, for any, you know, for you to find them funny, because you wanna be endeared towards them, you know. And I think that's something that Ford and Greg do so well. They're so charming and endearing, even if their characters aren't always good people.
yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think there's a sense in which the characters of Jack and Victor, are total mates. There's you can't get away from that. But it doesn't stop them bickering. It doesn't stop them having disagreements. But at the same time, not just them, but the rest of the world of Craig Lang, when it's threatened in any way, they really kind of close ranks and pull together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's really important show, because that's really indicative of that kind of like solidarity you do find in these schemes, in these complexes. Do you know what I mean? That kind of community thing, you know, Like, sorry, Craig, but I live in Glasgow, and the whole People Make Glasgow slogan that everybody hates, it's really real. It's really true, you know? Like, there is that kind of, like, spirit and solidarity that you find in especially working class communities, and I think that comes across so well without being patronising. I find that so many things that are written for or about working class people are really, like, patronising and condescending, but I never find that Stow Game is.
No, I think that's a fair comment, and I think you just need to look at the demographics of the audience to realise that that Stow Game was one of those kind of, I suppose, once in a generation, universally, or once in a generation show that has absolute universal appeal that cuts across age groups, social class, you name it. It's a show that offers something for everyone.
Yeah, and I've been asking, and obviously beforehand we've had Rab Christie and we've had Michael Hines on, and I asked both of them this question, so I'll be interested to hear your answer as well. Did you know after, say, the pilot, did you watch that and think, oh right, this is going to be, you know, however many seasons, it's going to play the hydro, it's going to become an iconic part of Scottish culture? Like, did you ever foresee it?
Absolutely not. It's not that I didn't think it was going to be successful, because as I said, you know, to an extent, the characters had been road tested. Ford and Greg as performers, their stock was extraordinarily high with the audience. So we knew that if anything was going to land as a success, then this had as good a chance as anything else. But it was a challenge. What they'd been used to doing, with the exception of the stage show of Stow Game that actually predated the TV appearances, with the exception of that, the writing, the comedy writing that they'd been doing up to that point, or which had actually been broadcast up to that point, was short form material, and it's a completely different skill that's required to tease something out into longer form narrative, and that was. That's one of the reasons why, when we decided that Chewing the Fat had run its course, we had a bit of a debate and a discussion between myself representing BBC Scotland and the production team and Ford and Greg about whether any of the characters that had been used within Chewing the Fat and which had established a bit of a rapport with the audience would lend themselves to longer form narrative comedy. I suppose the key example that you would point to would be Rab C. Nesbitt out of Naked Video, where a decision was made to build that world around Rab and a very, very successful show was created. So in the end, it boiled down to a decision between the world that could be created around the character of Ronald Villiers, or the world that could be created around Jack and Victor, the old guys, as the shorthand was for them, yeah, as a sketch. And at the end of the day, the balance, the equality, if you like, in the pairing between Ford and Greg with Jack and Victor was far greater than with Ronald Villiers and Greg, who had played the director all the time, was effectively a straight man to Ronald. So it made much more sense to explore the idea of making it Jack and Victor. But of course, the guys still had to write the script. Once the script was written, we thought, I think we're onto something here. Shot the pilot. It was always in the back of my mind that if the pilot worked, we wouldn't simply transmit it as a pilot, that we would roll over to a series. And that's exactly what we did.
And I can imagine as well, Ewan, that the based on our show around Toronto Villiers were saying, like, Greg wouldn't even have been able to play, like, the directors, because you couldn't really have him. Well, it would seem a bit odd if he was in the show on a weekly basis and he was just returning as a different director. And because of the comedy in the Ronald Villiers character, he probably wouldn't be the same director, because he would not continue to hire this man on a weekly basis who was quite useless as an actor. So you can always imagine that if he was going to be, he'd have to be like his agent, and then you'd maybe end up with extras before extras. But maybe without as much social commentary going on.
Yeah. I mean, that's all of that is perfectly valid speculation, you know. But it didn't take a lot of deliberation, to be honest. I think that both Ford and Greg were keener on the idea of taking on the old guys. So that's exactly what we did.
And for those of you kind of who don't know, what's your job on a kind of weekly basis on a show like Still Game? How much say did you have over, like, the final product that then goes out in the BBC?
Well, the broadcaster who's paying for a commissioned programme has the final say in what goes on, but. You know, when you're dealing with a creative team and a creative partnership at the heart of it, you certainly don't go in any sense throwing your weight around. My role as executive producer would be from the word go. Once an episode had been written, like the script editor, like the exec producer from the comedy unit would be to, and indeed the producer of the show would be to read the script and feedback any notes on it, any comments, things that I thought worked really well, things that maybe didn't work so well, and then, you know, there's an element of compromise creeps in. But I have to say that Ford and Greg always delivered very strong first draft scripts. That's just that was one of their great strengths. You know, it's not true of every writer that you'll come across. Some will go to, you know, third, fourth, fifth draft, but with Ford and Greg, generally, it was more a question of little tweaks here and there rather than any major overhaul. And then once an episode is recorded and it's been roughly assembled as an edit cut, then the exec producers again would be feeding into what they think works, what doesn't work. But generally speaking, there weren't massive amounts of things that didn't work or were needing seriously revised.
And how quickly into the run of the first series, or maybe even later, but I'd think it would be the first series, did you realise that you had something that was just as big, something that was going to be just as kind of revered and as big a hit, and ultimately became even more of a bigger hit than Chewing the Fat?
Well, we're going back kind of 18, 19 years now. I have to say, you know, this predated a lot of competition in television terms and broadcast terms, and, you know, it was possible to get really stonking big audiences for linear television services, and it was very clear very early on, judging by the audience response, that Still Game was going to be a hit. if the guys could maintain the level of writing and imaginative thinking that they put into the early episodes. And, you know, history has proved that to be the case.
Gosh, imagine being, and I keep thinking this whenever we whenever we interview people, but like, I imagine being part of something and then 20 years later it's so well known. It is still Game. Like, isn't that mad? You don't think about things being created. You just, well, for me, it was just always there because it first aired when I was four years old. So like,
it's all right, Ewan, I was in my teens, if that makes you feel any better.
Right, okay.
But like, I plus all my pals, like my pals at school, my brother and sister, we grew up with it. You never think of its conception, you know. You never think about it being created. It's just there. It just exists.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always a huge element of serendipity about these things. I happened to be a big fan of what Ford and Greg were doing, and I hope that they would say that I got behind them and supported them to the best of my abilities. But at the end of the day, it was a pleasure and a privilege to be working with these guys. They were the biggest comedy act in Scotland over, you know, years and years, and you know, Still Game as their legacy is an amazing body of work.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? And you've obviously got an eye for it, because not only have you done Still Game, we've done, now correct me if any of this is wrong, because I am getting my information from the internet, but you've done Scott Squad, you've done, as in being an executive producer on Still Game, Scott Squad, Berniston, Lemmy's Show, one of my personal favourites, Gary Tank Commander, just like, the list goes on. It's incredible. You must have, you know, a real eye for what is, and they're all, you know, Scottish and down to earth, but they're also very, very different shows with different groups of people a lot of the time, you know.
Yeah, but I think as an individual, I'm quite easy bored, variety being served up for the audience was always really important for me. You know, we always used to take a bit of flack about being heavily central belt in terms of comedy, and being west central belt in particular.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, you just had to back the best talent, the talent that had the most interesting things to say. And, you know, and whether that was Lemmy or whether it was Robert and Ian, the Berniston team, who, of course, came through writing on Chewing the Fat. I don't know. I think, again, I was fortunate, and the comedy unit played a big part in most, if not all, of this. I was fortunate in looking after television service for BBC Scotland at a time where there was some great writing and performing in the world of comedy.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's such a testament as well. I think, you know, a little miss national here, but I think, you know, there is a tendency to look over Scotland when it comes to a lot of, you know, comedy things. I think especially, you know, 20, 25 years ago, so the fact that these shows were being made and they were being produced and there was a whole comedy unit kind of like dedicated to doing that, I think is a real testament to the kind of like, I guess, homegrown Scottish talent, because we're here and we're funny and we got shit to say, you know?
Yeah. I mean, most people who spend their careers working in broadcasting in Scotland or in Wales or Northern Ireland, I would suggest, probably feel that in terms of getting that material out throughout the UK, that at times certainly it felt like the bar was being set higher.
Mm.
And that excuses would be found, whether that was about language, dialect, referencing, whatever it might happen to be, it was not a thing that I ever bought into. I think, you know, good comedy tends to be universal. And you can just see how successful Still Game has been on Netflix, for example.
Mm-hmm.
In the early days, it was a hard sell to get Still Game onto the UK network of the BBC. And it took until series three, I think, if I recall rightly, before it was picked up and given not a very good slot.
Yeah, and because it is series three, because that's when they had to change the intro song as well. Because the intro song had a copyright issue for BBC, I remember researching that. but yeah, no, I think it's the same. It's the same in theatre as well, like regional theatre and regional dialects and accents. You know, they have to. It's almost as if they have to be at a higher standard to be considered the same as things. You know, things from down south and things in RP. But do you know what? Bugger them, because Still Game's great, and all this. You know, well, what I mean? We produce such good stuff.
Yeah. It's for me, you can point to loads of examples of it. You know, I mean, you can point to Gavin and Stacey coming out of Wales. Mm. You can point to Derry Girls coming out of Northern Ireland. And, you know, I think the same is true of that body of work that the BBC Scotland supported from you know, the early 2000s right the way through.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So, Ewan, we've already given our opinions on this particular episode called. Looking back at it again, what was your kind of overall thoughts of the show?
I was glad to be asked to focus on called, because it's one of my favourite episodes. I think different people will always have different views and perspectives on which episodes work best. But for me, it had a great mix of a kind of underlying social comment about the way in which pensioners are treated in society. Or a certain strata of pensioner is treated in society. And it also had an excellent balance and mix of some pure slapstick, some great visual comedy, and a bit of pathos in there too, but also just some extremely fine writing and playing from the whole cast.
It's one of those
writing from Ford and Greg, of course, but playing by the whole cast.
Yeah, it's one of those episodes I think that comes up quite a lot whenever you see like a Twitter thread and somebody asks like, what's the best episodes of Still Game? And I think Called is one that always features very high up, and I think it is because of that. Like you mentioned that the pathos, but it's also just a really funny and really rewatchable episode as well.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, there are some episodes that you just, that if I'm asked about Still Game, I instantly come to mind. Hatch from series four, I absolutely loved. Fly Society from series six, and Called that we're talking about at the moment. But I think the sheer consistency of the writing over 60 odd episodes, which is really quite atypical these days, because the norm mostly, certainly in UK television, is for people to be writing far fewer episodes than that, maybe going 2-3 series or whatever, more of the kind of Fawlty Towers model than something that is sustained over in the case of Ford and Greg, albeit with a gap in the middle, the best part of a 16-17 year period.
And you can see that this episode as well, it's kind of one of those ones where, as you're saying, it kind of had that longevity, because you're just kind of it was just easy enough to, well, not easy enough, but you know what I mean, like there was such good writing and there were such good characters and there were such good characters around them that you could just kind of pick a kind of, it didn't have to be too over the top, too elaborate the plot, it could just be like a simple thing like pensioners are cold, yeah. it's a winter snap. Funnily enough, we're recording this. It won't be released for a few weeks, but we're recording this when, you know, -17 in the Highlands today.
Yeah.
It's kind of the, you get that cold snap, and then it's just kind of how they deal with it. How and then you can just kind of, obviously it was the first series, but they obviously knew enough about the characters anyway that then it kind of becomes, rather than kind of, you know, writing a piece from scratch, you just kind of take the characters, know how they would react in situations, and then just put them in what is a fairly simple concept of pensioners surviving the winter.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Yeah, and but that sort of story thread of about fuel poverty, how Winston starts converting everyone,
the king of Leckie,
the king of Leckie, and what he's about, that, you know, that is equally relevant today, maybe even more so,
definitely more so, I would say.
Oh, definitely. You know, poverty, it's not gone away. It's gotten worse. I think so anyway.
Bethany, any other questions on this episode?
No, actually, you have answered all of our questions and so eloquently too. I wish I was that eloquent when I spoke. You're so measured. It's so nice. Thank you so much, Ewan Angus, one of the executives or the executive producer.
One of
the executive producers on Still Game. Thank you so much for coming on this evening, answering all of our questions, and we hope you have a lovely, lovely night.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
Cheers, Ewan.
Time to rewatch Still Game with Bethany and Craig.
Wasn't Ewan brilliant? It's so, so interesting to hear about the conception of the show and where it came from. I love that. All three of our guests have been quite good at that so far.
I'm obsessed with the idea of a Ronald Villiers show.
Oh, me too, man.
Never be anywhere near as good as Still Game, but it's funny.
I want to see it now.
I quite want to attend that alternate universe where it happened, just to have a watch of those episodes, and then I'll come back to this universe.
I know, but imagine being the man making that decision. Imagine being like, oh no, what should I pick? And like, his reasoning behind it was like, oh, the chemistry was better between these two characters. And I'm like, imagine if he picked wrong.
And that kind of goes back to what I said in our initial episode we did, where it was just the two of us kind of doing our, kind of basically just giving our Still Game thoughts before we watched a specific episode. And that when it was first kind of announced that it was going to be Jack and Victor, and they weren't really, I think maybe for an older audience, but for teenagers as I was at the time, they weren't as memorable as like Ronald Villiers or kind of like the, you know, the Lighthouse Keepers or the You've Taken That Too Far guys, like all these kind of characters with their catchphrases and stuff. They were, and I think at the time, had a lot of the audience of my age, known that it was a choice between Ronald Villiers and Jack and Victor. Like, a lot of people my age would have said Ronald Villiers would be funnier. But yeah. I think, thankfully, it was adults making the decisions, not a bunch of plucky, horny teenagers.
Thankfully, we let some adults make the decision.
Yes. It's always handy.
I know, it's mad. But I think it's time to move on to our categories. Ooh, I should write some category music and it'll be like da-da-da-da-da, categories.
Don't do that.
Okay. And our first category is my personal favourite category, our favourite joke.
Right, well, there's two very good visual ones. So I'm going to start with the what I think was my favourite joke in dialogue, which was when Jack is badgering Victor to turn the fire on, and he says, "Put the bulb on, it suggests warmth."
Yeah, I've written that down as well.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's kind of true. But yeah, it's also more true of Jack's follow-up line of, "No, it suggests you're an old tight-fisted bastard or something."
Aye. It's so funny. It's like when you put, it's like when you don't have a fire, but at Christmas you want like that like feeling. So you put the log fire on Netflix and you leave that to play for 2 hours. Have you ever done that?
I'll send you 20 quid, Bethany. This is clearly a cry for help.
Please, I need it for the lecky. Anything else for your favourite joke?
Well, I think obviously all the slipping on the ice.
Yeah,
is
classic.
Very good and classic. But I also had the visual joke at the end with the electricity going off in the stair, and then all of Craig Lang, and then all of Glasgow. Is it like switching on things throughout the house? It's a superb way to end the episode.
I think I completely agree. I think the slipping on the ice and the lights going off as visual gags are just brilliant. And also, and do you know what? Classic gag that I think is often overlooked, but you see this in quite a lot of like sitcoms, that every time I shag your wife, she makes me a sandwich. he says to the barman. And I'm like, do you know what? I've heard that joke in quite a few iterations, but that really made me laugh. Really makes me chuckle.
It's a very good delivery from Ford Kiernan for that.
Yeah, very good delivery. Well done, Ford. Good job. I like to imagine they listen. Next up is best line reading.
I had two for these, both for Victor. The first is when they're in Manky Frankie's flat and he's trying to make small talk with them. And Manky Frankie is not having any of it. And it's just a simmering tension. And he's like, "Oh, you must like your fish and chips." "Yeah, we do. I'm good."
Yeah, I've read the exact same one down. "I good." Because it's just like, what do I say to that? "You must love your fish." "I good." It's so funny. It's so funny.
And then the next one I have is at the end where not after, but Jack is telling him the dream that he had, and it's sounding quite creepy, and they're kind of leaning into each other and it's all quiet, and then the explosion happens for next door with Winston fiddling with a lecky, and then Victor just says, "I just about shat myself there." And he says it like, there's no like comedy in the way he says it. It's like deadly serious.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it funny.
Yeah, I completely agree. That and Stevie at the bookie is going, "Not overly." I love that line reading. He is so creepy. He is so creepy. And I think the fact that he has like, what, two lines in the whole in the whole episode, and that was one of my favourite line readings. He looks at them and he's creepy. Aye, creepy man.
That is a good one as well.
Aye, it's good. Oh, Kit's good. Next up is best supporting character.
As much as it's tempted to give it to Winston, I think Winston only really has two kind of, maybe three standout scenes. So he's in it a lot, so it's kind of easy to give him to it for that. And he's quite memorable in it for the scene where he's cutting about the house and he's putting ice cubes in his armpits and then dropping them at the drinks. And the scene prior to that where he's in the barras and he's wanting the two heaters, and the boys ask him why he wants two. And then you can see again when he's putting in the electricity and it kind of blows up at him. Those are all very good. But there's other scenes as well where he's not doing a whole lot special. So I'm just going for pure, you know, average rating of scene. He's only in one scene, but it is an average rating of 10 out of 10, and it's Manky Frankie.
Played
by Stevie Allen.
Do you know what? I respect your choice, sir. I do. I had the exact same. I feel like I'm gonna have to go first next time because it must sound like I'm stealing all your ideas. Everything you say, I'm like, yes, I agree. Yes, I did prepare. I do completely agree. I think Winston, even though he had an important character and he was, some of his scenes were absolutely great. I actually put Eric. I know, purely because, and again, he's not in a lot, but what he is in, I just think he's so funny. I don't know what it is. Like, I keep watching him and I just think he's a wee steam sealer. Every time he's in a scene with someone, I'm like, Eric, you know, and I don't know what it is about this episode, like him falling at the beginning and all of his stuff later. Like, and again, he doesn't do a lot, but what he does do is pretty excellent. So that's my vote.
Fair enough. I would not have thought of him at all. I think there's better Eric episodes, to be honest. But you do you, Bethany, all right?
Do you know what? Thank you. I'm really glad I've got your support in this time. Right. What aged poorly?
I struggled for this. There's only really one you could say that they might have not done these days, but it's not even the most kind of offensive kind of anti-gay joke. It's Victor saying to Jack, like, who's going to keep you... Who's going to keep you warm? What's going to keep you warm when you're in a wee cold... What's going to happen when you're in a wee cold jail cell and you've nothing to keep you warm except a hot bobby right up the arse? And I can't even say that age poorly because, I don't think they would necessarily make that joke these days.
I still laughed. It's still funny. Yeah. I laughed. I still think it's funny, especially because it's like also a hot bobby. That is so gross.
And it's the way he delivers right up the arse as well. I know. Real emphatic way of saying it.
Like, the idea of being aware of the temperature of one's penis is really not, like, it's not something, you know what I mean? Like, it's funny. It is really funny.
Other than that, I couldn't really spot anything.
I couldn't either. I wrote down aged poorly, more like aged well. The government want us to die, they can't wait to bury us. Yeah, and I was just like,
It was during New Labour, who were a wee bit red Tory, but not quite as Tory as the current lot of Tories who are systematically, you know, letting people die left, right and centre every day.
I love it. Yeah.
Don't vote Tory, everyone.
Please, I'm actually fucking begging you. Don't vote Tory. And it's just, I was like, you know, watching that and I'm like, isn't it sad how that it's not gotten better in 20 years since that was filmed? And I just think, oh well, so it I don't think it's aged poorly, but I think the fact that it has aged not really at all is quite, it, like, you know, it's sad, it's indicative, and they were you know, having this, as we were talking about earlier, that like underlying political thing going on, and it's still so relevant today. That's what I was thinking about for this category.
Yep.
Sad times. Next up is Craig. Give me some smart-arsed comments about this episode, please.
Right, I'm going to be smart-arsed about quite a lot of things here. I'm going to annoy people.
Go on.
Said in previous episodes that Frankie stays in the same block as them. In fact, I'm pretty sure it said that he stays up the stairs for Victor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also shown in later episodes, in fact, in the series, that he definitely stays in the same block as well. So why are they using his phone instead of just going back to one of their own houses?
Yeah, I was thinking that. There's no... Because he's on the 8th floor... And they're on the 14th. So why on earth do they not just go hop in the elevator, go back up to the 14th floor, and be like, just use my own phone?
They don't have to... speaking of great line readings, your dad's deed. Just cutting through Jack when he's just rambling on the telephone. That was brilliant as well. And, so that was one. You've said the line already. Every time I shag your wife, she makes me a sandwich. What wife?
I know.
Why is Bobby offended by that?
I know.
He has no wife. I've already said Fergie's referred to as Derek. Stevie shouting, close the door, you're letting the cold in. Like, Flipside just opened the door to walk into the bookies. I mean, what the fuck else are they supposed to do?
Yeah, that, and they've just got a fucking free lecky. So, like, why do you care?
I know why, yeah. Is he literally shouting this at everybody who walks in the door?
Close the door.
Don't come in. Don't give me money.
That's my mum in the winter. Shut the door. Shut the windy.
And this isn't so much a smart ass comment. It's just kind of, I just did a wee bit of research just for those who were wondering. At the end, when he reveals that the guy who was in the coffin was Jack Lord from Hawaii 5-0, and they didn't know whether he was dead or not, I just looked it up. Sadly, Jack Lord was dead at the time of recording. He died in 1998.
Aww, sad. Well, thank you for that. Thanks to that. I don't have any smart arse comments. I really don't.
No, just leave it to me. Leave it to me to be the absolute nitpicker.
Yeah, because I want you to be hated and me to be loved. So I think, you know, no, I'm joking.
Bethany, my job is my main job is a Scottish football journalist. I am well used to being hated.
Babe, I've read the comments on your TikTok. Trust me, I know. I did write some down, but it was the same ones that you've just said. And I think, and also I think because it wasn't quite, there was plot obviously in this episode, but because it wasn't so plot driven, I think feel like, you know, there weren't very many plot holes to have, which is quite good.
There's no B story really, is there? Because the B story eventually ties into the A story.
Yeah. So, which is nice, actually. It is, and I prefer that in a programme where the stories tie up at the end. I kind of don't really like it when the A story and the B story run in tandem and then they don't ever join, and there's no, like, you know, overlap and crossover. That's mm-hmm. not really my bag. So I do like it when they come together at the end and it feels quite nice. Nice. Feels like they've tried.
Yes.
And now for one of the last things, Jack versus Victor. Who do you think won?
After last week's show, I was actually getting a wee bit, I mean, worried is maybe a strong word, but I was getting a tiny bit concerned that I maybe just naturally liked Jack as a character more and he was going to win a lot of these. But I think this episode is Victor hands down.
Victor, the man of principles. He's not wanting to drive up the price of Lecky by getting it for free. He's the one that convinces Jack and then Jack betrays him.
And he also has the best lines as well, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I love it. I feel like that's how you choose. You choose with the best lines, and I'm like, but who's getting into heaven? That's what I want to know. Yeah, I agree. I think Victor hands down. So at the moment we are 2 to Jack and 1 to Victor. Who will come out on top? I don't know. Does anyone care? I do. So, and I think that might be the end of the show.
Yes, that was a very enjoyable episode.
Aye. Oh, I should do the... It's not the end of the show. No, it is the end of the show.
Yes, it is.
Shoot me with a knife. Yes, it is. It was a very enjoyable episode, a very enjoyable time talking to the lovely Ewan Angus about his role in making Still Game what it was and bringing it to our televisions. What a nice day.
Goodbye.
I just had the bye.
This was a Terrace Podcast production. Sports Social
Podcast Network. With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.